This only works if you ask questions. I have a saying, which is true about AI, 0 to 1 is harder than 1 to 100. That to me is why AI is so important to learn, because it gets you from 0 to 1 so quickly. I took the 81 verses on the airplane. I took the 81 verses of the Tao and asked it to create a training course, each verse a different training, utilizing Dr. Wayne Dyer's Change Your Thoughts, Change Your Life, and as if I was David Meltzer, speaker, author, entrepreneur. And while I was doing everything else, my phone was just creating a training course that I'll teach and channel from utilizing that. And I don't know how long that would have taken me. So it lets humans be more human. The other two things I think, especially for your kids, they'll pick up AI. You don't have to worry about that one, but they should still be reading. You got to understand the difference between real and fake. And when you read, you can distinguish between real and fake. It's the only practice I know. So I'm a big believer in reading. My kids are bummed at that. And then two, personal skills. If I was going to give advice to be successful in the future, it'd be no AI, read a lot, and work on your personal skills in person, on the phone, via email, traditional media, and social media. Those are all personal skills. If my kids would do what I want them to do, I would have them knock on 150 doors a day and either sell real estate or solar. Not only would they make millions of dollars, but I'd have them prepared for life. They would separate themselves from most kids today. So just a little tidbit to start. So 0 to 1, who has the first question? Help me out. The first one's always the hardest. Let me tell you something real quick. Not you. Someone's going to give me a first question. Here's my favorite thing ever. I will literally do a Q&A session, and nobody wants to do the first question. Then everybody's like all hot to questions. Then what I really like is when it's like time for me to leave. Hold on, hold on. Like the person that didn't say anything, I got to ask you this question. I'm like, where were you? All right, we'll start here.
What is
your name for everyone?
Oh, I'm Andrea. Hi, everyone.
Thank you for coming.
I'm curious, what does success look like for you by the end of the event? What are you hoping to get out of it? Such good
Well, I love that because I love people to take away something. So success for me is to have all of you in my neighborhood. So success for me is I'm building a neighborhood. And because of social media especially, it's really big. And my criteria to be in my neighborhood is you need to be able and want to help one another and know people that will help one another. Think about the power of that. Everybody's different, but if you come in with an open mind, and I actually have a group of people, some of you belong to it. It went from a private coaching group. Too many people got into it, so I couldn't coach everybody. So I switched it to a private networking group with one-on-one access to me every day. So you have to sign this overlap agreement. Hey, guys, you have to sign this overlap agreement, which is modern-day handshake. So I'm old, so I used to do business on a handshake. And what a handshake meant to me was I'm going to remember what I promised to do for you, and you're going to remember what you promised to do for me. And when things change, which they absolutely will, time, value, and emotion changes, we're going to work together and be honest about the changes. So if it's the deal doesn't work out the way that we planned it, we're going to work together to make it work out. We're just going to be honest instead of hiding and suing and all the negative things that happen and interference that people have in their lives. So I created an overlap agreement that says, look, in the overlap of my day, and now with technology, I can search. My friend moved to South Dakota. I met a dentist there, and I was like, dude, can I get an overlap agreement with you? He's like, what are you talking about? I go, bring me a speaking gig or a client. This is what I'll pay you. But if I have someone that moves to South Dakota and needs a dentist, I'm like, what would you give me? He's like, Starbucks card? I'm like, sure. But it's codified. And I actually now speak at Property Mailed every year, and I get Starbucks cards because I meet people from South Dakota that, hey, do you know a dentist? But it's to the thousands of people. And it's a seven-figure opportunity for me now. It's moving to eight figures. And so what I want out of this is everybody here to be able to help one another, know people to help another, join our private networking group, get an overlap agreement in place, not just with me. We post them for everyone in there so you can search them as well. And so it's a different frequency. The dinner is a different frequency. And we curate, when people give me shit because I charge for some of the stuff that I do, And it's not because we give the money to charity, right? We'll raise more money in there for charity. The reason I do it is I curate the room. So in my private networking group, it's $497 for the year, completely guaranteed. You don't like my haircut? Take your money back. You didn't find value. You didn't show up because you're lazy. Take your money back. But at least it curates the room from people that are just there to bleed, because I guarantee it. And look, and to be honest, if someone doesn't have it, then and they really want to join, I'll let them join. But if they don't have it, they probably can't bring a lot to the table yet. So I'd rather help them on the side to earn more money in order to do that. So hopefully all of you will want to join the neighborhood after the dinner tonight. That's not a matter. Yeah. So perfect question to start, Andrea. All right, who has the next question?
So how did you go from where you were perhaps invisible, unknown, and obscure to standing on stages and speaking to the world?
That's a good question. So I was worse. I was not invisible. I was Lee Steinberg's guy or Warren Moon's partner. I didn't ever have a name. And I think that's worse than being like invisible is, yeah, totally in shadows. And so how do you become from being invisible or that guy into having your own brand? I believe that there's four things that you have to learn to do in order to build awareness of your personal product, service, or solution. One, I'm probably one of the world's greatest content capturers. So I capture content everywhere. I'm not a content creator. I can't dance. I'm not very creative. But I am excellent at capturing content. I capture content when I'm answering questions. I capture content from the stage when I'm coaching. I'm capturing content all the time. And then, so the first step is, no matter who you are, you need to capture your essence. So I'm not stylistically the best. You know, I'm not Steven Spielberg where you get great angles of and somehow made myself look beautiful. So I am not beautiful, and my wife really is that beautiful because I don't know how to make someone look more beautiful. And she really is. I'm like, shit, I'm an amazing photographer. But I capture my essence, who I am. And I'm really good at that, and I'm getting better at just being myself. I think it's important when you capture to realize that everyone should have an unsubscribe. People should be unsubscribing from you in your life. And I think if you really like to be famous, you'll get to where like President Trump is, where you have 50% unsubscribers and 50% subscribers. That doesn't seem like a good life to me, right? I don't want everyone to love me and all the other half to hate me. That doesn't, and plus everyone bothers. I've been around, you know, Warren Moon, Steve Young, and in their prime, and we couldn't get anything done. I like to be just you famous, right? You show up to a party, they're like, just you. And your wife's like, what? Or at the airport, like one person knows you and they're like, thank you for your content. Can I take a picture of you? That's awesome. So my subscriber list and unsubscriber list is 10%, right? I think 10% when you're at your frequency, 10% of the people are gonna love you, 10% are gonna hate you. And then the more consistent you are in capturing your content, then you'll start gathering more of that middle people that don't know you, right? You're invisible. So then you practice capturing, then you go to modification. And I outsource all my modification. So you modify your essence to fit the platforms that are on. So I have capture pictures with Aspire, right? That's just a picture that you'll see on the big things, but it's captured by me and then modified professionally for that. And then Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok, YouTube. And as it grew, I start paying more and more people that are specialists in modification for those platforms. Then the third step is amplification. So you can't sell a secret. And so when you get down the capturing side, then the modification side, now you can amplify it in all these different ways, in person, on the phone, via email, and traditional and social media. And that becomes exponential because now someone likes you and then they tell someone else. But it really works when you have the fourth component, which came from being more mature. And it started with understanding Shakespeare, Disney, Einstein, all the people that I studied. Shakespeare especially, because thousands of years ago, what did he say? The whole world's my stage. That wasn't true when he wrote Hamlet, but it is today. And so understanding that if you capture your content, modify it, and amplify it, you need to have a perpetual strategy, because that and will be more and more important to have your own social silo. We all know how dangerous social silos are, but they're also very powerful. So I have a full-time employee that will literally go up to you and say, "Hi, my name's Nick. What do you do?" And Nick, and then you'll tell him what you do and say, "Oh, would it help you if I introduce you to David Meltzer?" 10% of the people will say, "Oh my God, I love that guy. I'd love to meet him." 10% would say, "Are you fucking kidding me? What a dick." And then Nick will ask them why and try to re-engineer their vision, because I'm not at their frequency. And then, or they knew me when I was young, either one.
And Nick did that.
Right, he did. And then, of course, if you don't know me, which is the majority of the people in the world, who the fuck is David Meltzer? Do you have Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn? What do you like to use? Here. Now I have a perpetual social silo. And now without me being there, someone can say, "Wow, I really like this guy. I'm going to follow him. I'm going to watch him." And then they start reaching out to join the neighborhood. And so capture, modify, amplify, and perpetuate. And you curate all three and you get better at all three and you practice. I coach a lot of people on this, and majority of the time I just teach them to find their essence, to get comfortable with it. And we don't post anything for a while, especially podcasters. I was like, "Dude, just let's do 10 episodes. I'll do them with you, but we're not going to post them." And once, and I also can give a guarantee, anyone willing for me to coach you to do a podcast, I will make you a top 1% podcast in the world. All you have to do is do 10.
Let's go.
I'm serious. 99% of podcasters quit before they get to 10 episodes. So it's not very difficult for me to make the guarantee. But you will get so much better. I was at the Grammys on Sunday night, and Will Smith, I thought it was genius. They were honoring Quincy Jones. So QJ, he said, "Man," and it just resonated with me. He goes, "Man, I owe him everything. I remember my first season of Fresh Prince, and QJ was the executive producer of it, and he gave me my opportunity." And he goes, "And I watched the first season, and all I can think of is, man, I suck." Like, he looks at himself, and that's the way I feel. I've done 2,000 of the playbooks. We've done 4,000 interviews on Office Hours. And I go back, and my biggest mistake is I wanted to get the biggest clients of mine and friends of mine on. So my first 100 episodes are Cameron Diaz and Andre Reed and, you know, all these people I knew, and I just suck. I'm like, "So tell me, Mr. Moon, what's it like to win a Heisman Trophy?" Like, it's like, "I didn't win one." "Oh shit." So make sure you capture, practice, and get mentorship in that way. Great question. All right, next question. Yes. Name?
Hema Lomax.
Yes.
Thank you for being episode 9 of my podcast today.
There we go. We're almost there.
Yes, almost there. It was awful, but there we go. Time to go. My question for you is two parts. What's your legacy? And are there any ways that you are still getting in your own way that you're working on?
Everybody, for sure. So let me answer the second one first. Every day I get in my own way. My secret is I only spend minutes and moments in my own way. So I believe we get in our own way by reacting to fear. Reacting to fear is an instant and obvious way of knowing that you're in your own way, because everybody knows that when they react to fear, they don't know why they're afraid. You can go to therapy and spend millions of dollars like I have, personal development. You're never going to know what you're exactly afraid of. There's too many variables, right? There's like past lives. There's like womb trauma, infant, toddler, teen, tween, 60s trauma. I'm not there yet, but I'm sure I'll have it. Right? All of these things. So what I do is I know I'm in my own way when I react to fear. I know that the reaction to fear is part of my ego. It's a human nature response. And so I use time to shorten the distance of resistance in my life. So I know I'm equal every day in my own way, the same amount of times, but less time. So I have more energy. I'm 57 years old. I have more energy than I did when I was 25. I'm not nearly as good a shape. I'm not as young, but I just don't interfere with my energy, because I spend minutes and moments in worry, anger, frustration, resentment, guilt, separation, inferiority, superiority, a need to be right, a need to be offended, a need to be set. All these things that I learned. And the cool thing is I don't have to pay my therapist anymore, because it's instant and obvious when I'm pissed or worried. And now I just have a mechanism in order to facilitate shorting the distance of resistance or getting in my own way. And I know fear is omnipresent. That it, as you expand, you're just afraid of different things, and then you're going to respond to that fear. And then there's other biochemical, bioanatomical things that can help facilitate that reaction to fear as well. And so that's one of the things that we talk about a lot in our coaching side of things in the group. And I get people to practice understanding how to react to fear in a shorter amount of time. Yes, sir. Good to see you.
Dave, how do you know when you've really impacted?
Oh, wait, I got to answer the first part of your question. You asked what my legacy was. Kindness. Simple. Like, it's not just the children. I get choked up because I channel it, but like, I just wish people would just think about it for a second. What if you and me and all of us, it was just being kind? Like, just looking at a situation. I watch the fires and there's a lot of kind people. And I think to myself, you know what? Why were you such a fucking dick before the fire? Like, why couldn't you have been a really good neighbor before the fire? How good do you feel, right? That infinite loop of giving, which I'll talk about tonight. So, like, literally one word on my tombstone, one word. I talk about being kind to your future self by doing good deeds. And you'll feel so, I do it all the time. I'm a very fast person, but I stop and hold the door open, and it might be the greatest feeling of my day. Just you feel it. It's not, even if the person doesn't say thank you. And so I think it's an important legacy. It doesn't have to be yours, but it's definitely mine. All right, your question again.
So how do you know when you've impacted someone? How can you really, you tell that they get it, or you've really moved their life along?
I can't. So I give meaning to everything that I see, and I allow other people to give that meaning as well, and I don't waste my time trying to figure it out. If you're married, do not tell, especially if you're the guy with a wife, do not tell your wife, I can't make you feel that way. This is a really dumb thing to say, right? You made me feel this way. I'm like, I can't make you feel anyway. You give meaning to what I'm saying, doing, thinking, what I'm feeling, but I can't make you feel a certain way. I wish I could, but you feel a certain way. And so I try not to to explore what impact I'm having. People will tell me an impact that I'm having. I want to impact people, but I know the science behind frequency. And so if I continue to work on my frequency, that it's going to attract the same frequency. And that, Dennis Waitley, he had a great impact on my life in sales. If anyone's old enough to know, like Zig Ziglar, Dennis Waitley, these are legends. And I lived in San Diego, and Dennis Waitley took a liking to me after a training. I worked for a really big company in my early 20s, and he's like, you're a born salesman, let me work with you. And I literally, at the time, resisted everything he was saying, because I thought I could outsell him. Little did I know what he was trying to teach me. But the impact along the linear life that I've lived, the human experience, is he planted these seeds, right? We resist, what we resist persists. I was afraid what he was saying was true about me and about sales and all that. And as I got older, all I hear is Dennis Waitley. And all I think about is, thank God that guy planted seeds. And I've been blessed because I've gotten to be friends with him, and he laughs at it, because I'll tell him, or Sharon Lecter, I'll tell her, you've had such an amazing impact on my life. Thank you so much. You know, and no, you've had that impact. I just maybe let you see things or gave a different meaning for you. Is that fair?
That's
perfect. All right, next question.
What's the talking
snake? The talking, the Memorex.
Travis Howard.
Hey, Travis.
You had mentioned earlier in response to there, I think it was step two or step three, you can't sell a secret.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile that with our favorite thing to share is a secret, right, as humans? So on that making to where you want to go, whatever, so for myself, I'm writing a book, I'm at the point of it, and getting to that, publishing is going to happen. I don't want to, I want it to be a secret in some ways because people want to share it, but obviously that's counter to it. I'm just wondering if you have any ideas on that.
So when you're talking about a secret, you're talking about a vision. You don't necessarily.
You share secrets with me all the time, right?
Right.
I met you first on one of your 5-minute episodes. I was a guest. I had
right.
met
you before. An office.
A couple of years ago, and in the research, I was like, oh, God, this guy's like, such on my vibe. How did I not know where he was? But you, then I started following you because I felt like you had more secrets. Obviously,
right.
you weren't sharing them, not keep them secret.
But. So let me help in a different construct. So you want to stimulate interest. So you don't have to tell the secret to stimulate interest. And today, I train only one way to stimulate interest, which is to get people to call you back, get back to you, DM you back, message you back. In the old days, when Dennis Waitley taught me to sell, I had to qualify because of the way we reached the universe, the total addressable community. Today, there's 7.6 billion people that's in your total addressable community. So if you're selling to, you know, a middle-aged divorced woman jewelry, you don't have to just call on that person, right? We don't have to sit there and cold call or knock on doors or hang out at some event that they're having or talk to divorce lawyers or whatever qualification that we used to do. And so today, the fastest and easiest way to be successful at what you want to be successful at is to learn to stimulate interest to get people to get back to you. In whatever platform or medium you enjoy utilizing, because they all have extraordinary reach. And so for me, I have lots of secrets and I can't sell a secret, but I can stimulate your interest to learn about the secret. And so for me, if I could double everyone, whatever you do today, if I could double the amount of people that got back to you, you would double your sales minimum. Because that it's an unlimited total addressable community. So if you get 2 people to get back to you and I can get 4 people to get back to you, you'll double the amount of sales that you have. It's math. You actually will more than double it because you'll get better at selling because you'll have more sales calls and you'll naturally, by practicing good behaviors, get better at what you're doing and minimizing the bad behaviors. Good behaviors are aligned with what? Where you want to be, not where someone else, not what's missing, not what you don't want. Bad behaviors is what's interfering with it. Don't make it more complex than it is. So I love to take inventory of my behaviors, both non-negotiable behaviors, behaviors I do every day, regardless of the circumstances, or negotiable behaviors, which are circumstantials, then relies on my ability to prioritize according to what I want, not what's missing, not what we don't have, not what other people want for me. And so one of the nuances in getting back is also having a relationship with circumstances. If you don't know your relationship with circumstances, then you're really not living the human experience correctly. Because it's circumstances that decipher whether or not you want to prioritize a human experience versus an infinite experience. And people get caught up all the time in purpose because they're caught up because they don't have a relationship with circumstances. So they feel like, I don't have a purpose. I don't know my why. I'd rather be doing this because there is better than here. And they get confused when, if you understand time in itself, that 2 minutes a day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. If somebody doesn't understand or believe me, just think about this. How many people have ever met a kid that studied 15 minutes of Spanish a day and didn't get an A? How many people know a kid that studied 15 hours on Saturday or Sunday and didn't get an A? Almost every one of them. So you can do the same thing with your kids. Two minutes a day is what minimum. These are all minimums, right? But I'm non-negotiable. I don't care what the interest rates are, the weather is, my flights. I'm getting a minimum amount of time, sleep, health, family, finance, faith, time itself, and relativity, which is relativity to what? Circumstances. Outside of you, it's just 24 hours. It's only circumstance that we all share. If I asked all of you to be here in the lobby at 5 p.m. and everybody was on time, we all would be here in a certain time. If I said, meet me when you're hungry, none of us would be here at the same time. It's circumstantial. And so I want everyone to start thinking of things in terms of circumstances, because time, emotion, and value change every instant that a decision is made or an agreement is made. The minute you make an agreement or a decision, time, emotion, and value changes. That's why I came up with the overlap agreement that says, hey, look, let's bring back the handshake, because we have technology. So I have a digital handshake that says, hey, we're going to we help each other and this is how, but we know time, emotion, and value is changing. So when it changes, we're both open-minded to say, hey, in order to get this done, I can't pay you this time. You know that family that you sent over for the Starbucks card, that family, they couldn't afford dental care, and so I hooked them up. Would it be okay I didn't send you the Starbucks card? But in that circumstance, so many times today, when people are not understanding circumstances and haven't left it open, what do? They feel bad because they can't afford to give the Starbucks card, and they'll say things like, no good deed goes unpunished, and then they won't tell the person what had happened, and then that person hears from the family, thank you so much, that's an amazing dentist, and then this person over here is going, what do you mean I didn't get my Starbucks card? That guy's a jerk. Meanwhile, nobody's a jerk. The system doesn't take into account time, emotion, and value changes, and circumstances are what you have to have a relationship to, either being non-negotiable or negotiable to it, and learning to prioritize the negotiable ones. You don't need to prioritize non-negotiables. I know every single day of my life, with a few exceptions, I'm going to do this for this amount of time minimum. And I get exponentiality. I'm a great husband. I'm a great father. I'm very healthy. I sleep amazing. Because I practice every single day for a minimum amount of time, almost every day of my life. Sometimes there's an exception. All right, next question. Come on now. There we go. Thank you.
Okay, so your younger self, what was one lie that you used to tell yourself, pretending to be something, and then you got into your career and realized your true essence?
Few things. One, money. I used to tell myself money buys love and happiness. I was convinced nobody could, and that's just so not true. Money allows you to shop. If you shop for the right things, you'll be super happy. So I'm a big money person. I believe you should make a lot of money. I think there's more than enough money for everyone. I think if you took all the money, put it in a desert, it'd redistribute itself to the same people. Guaranteed. The other lie, this one's harder, that I was honest. Like, I was convinced that I wasn't a bullshitter, and I was the biggest bullshitter, and I bullshitted myself more than anyone. And I know genetically and energetically I inherited the bullshit gene, helped me sell, oversell, back end sell, lie, manipulate, and cheat people, and get ahead in life. But I'm very, very honest, and I catch myself. I actually have told my wife to embarrass me if I exaggerate or very rarely will I lie. Sometimes I will lie with good intention because it's just not worth hurting somebody. And so, but very rarely, but I still tend, I tell great stories and I talk fast and sometimes the facts come out and I don't stop and say, yeah, that's not exactly true. Let me clarify that. So this is an example. I was met these very wealthy individuals in Las Vegas. We went to dinner for the first time, and I told them about the studios that I had. We had opened Blue Wire Studio at the Wynn. They were super impressed. And I told them, look, you know, I'm an investor in this, a founding investor in Blue Wire. And I said, but we have another studio in California where I do this TV show. And I made it seem like I owned that studio, but I didn't, right? I had like tiny interest in that studio. The other one I actually invested in, and my wife, in front of these people I just met, that's not true. That's not true. And then my first reaction was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you are taking money out of our pockets. These people, I've just lost all credibility. And then I thanked her, and I explained to everyone at the table. I said, look, I don't know if you believe in genetic or energetic inheritances. I'm really working on, you know, the truth vibrates the fastest. And I've asked my wife to correct me, even if it's unintentionally, that I'm misleading or over-exaggerating. And I hope, and I thank you for your patience and understanding, but please don't look down on my wife, look down on me, because I've asked her to do that. And they ended up, of course, respecting me more, and of course, respecting her even more than that for putting up with it. Yeah, exactly. All right, right here. Thank you.
Okay, so 0 to 1.
Yes.
What is the first thing you need to do? You're a bootstrapped small business. You know who your market is. You know who you want to target. You know what your
So you know your what. Yes. So if you know your what's the first thing to do? Really easy. Know your who. The fastest way to get to what you want and where you want to be is find someone that's already there with what you want. It's the fastest way. So I always say know your who, because it's not just finding someone that sits in the situation you want to be in and ask them for directions, but also help someone get to where they want to be. And so when you have clarity of knowing your what, then it should be know your who. Then they'll help you expedite the how. And now you'll live in abundance, which is prioritizing the now. Remember, 100% of the things you do now get done. I call it do it now, do it next. So I'll ask people when I walk by that work with me, I'm like, dude, what are you working on? And they'll tell me, what's next? If they can't tell me what's next, I pull them out and I walk with them and I'll say, you know, people feel overwhelmed because we're blessed, right? We live in abundance. We have more options, opportunities, and touches of favor, so we feel overwhelmed. Most people take that as punishment. Oh, I got too much to do. Oh, you have too many options and opportunities and touches of favor in your life, and you're now a victim. Or they procrastinate. And the antidote is to take them on a walk and say, what we need to know is what you're doing now and what you're doing next. If you always know what you're doing now and next, you're not going to ever feel overwhelmed or procrastinate. So you need to learn what's important to you by knowing what you want, who you can help, who can help you, and how to utilize your time according to circumstances. Non-negotiable time can wipe out about 11 or 13 hours of your day, and 7 of them or 8 of them are sleeping. So that leaves you a whole bunch of time to do whatever the F you want according to what you want to do, who can help you, and how to get it done. You just have to learn to prioritize by what you want. And prioritization is the antidote to the biggest problems in business, in my opinion. People sit there looking for what they already have because they feel as if I have too much. And then they say, I don't have enough because I had too much. And that's why the shift in the paradigm from searching for your why to applying your why. And I have, if anyone wants it, hopefully all of you will join our community, but I have 5 daily practices to practice. Know your what, your who, your how, and your now, and apply your why. And it'll go through and help you practice that, the good behaviors, and identify the bad ones. Great questions. All right, who's next? Hi, Dave.
Hey, what's going on, my brother? How are you?
That's an amazing stud right there, Dave Williams. He's a great podcast. He started, too, with 10. How many do you have now?
What's that?
How many podcasts do you have now?
What do we got? 3 different shows.
Yeah. How many episodes?
How many episodes do we have right now? We're going to be up to like
80. Nice. But he started right where you did.
Henry Giralf.
Hey, Henry.
You mentioned earlier when I came in about door-to-door sales.
How yes.
important do you think that is when someone's learning to sell or really getting out and growing the business?
Yeah, so for those of you that weren't here, I told if I could get my kids to do anything, it would be to knock on 150 doors a day and sell solar or real estate. They'd make a shitload of money too. But the skill set in the long run, that is the key. Yeah, there's 3 things that I believe kids should learn. Just to repeat, I know you guys were here. AI will be easy. They definitely will know more about AI than we will. 2, they need to read more because they'll be able to decipher fake from real. Reading literally allows you to understand the difference between imagination and materialization and monetization. It's the best mechanism to practice it. And then people skills. And trust me, if you can knock on a door 150 times a day, you will increase your people skills beyond imagination. Your emotional intelligence will increase exponentially. Your intelligence will increase and your sales capability. It's the best thing in the world to do. I had a kid who came to me, young realtor, just failing miserably in Newport Beach, and came in and he said, Mr. Meltzer, I can't afford you, but please, can you help me? I want to make $1 million this year. And I said, well, that's probably limiting yourself, right? You'll never overachieve your own self-image, or you're limiting the meaning that you give your past. I said, I just have one thing, and I guarantee if you do it, you will make more than $1 million in 12 months from now. I guarantee it. So what's that? I said, knock on 150 doors a day, 7 days a week. And just ask them, what are you doing today in real estate? Do you know anyone that can help me? That's all I want you to ask them. I don't want you to say, are you selling your home? Are you listing your home? I just want to say, hey, what are you doing today? Or what do you think about real estate today? And do you know anyone that can help me? And I think he made over $3 million his first year. But he did knock on. I made him text me a thumb. Some of you that I coach, I do this sometimes. I made him text me a thumbs up every day. 150 or more, minimum. Yeah, making money, right, is a mindset. It's an energy. Most people, they don't make money because they're not literally willing to be consistent enough. That's the only reason they don't make the money. And they don't have a direct line to understand. They want other things to make you money, which is cool. But that's why in my own mission, it's make a lot of money first to help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. And I promise you, if you make a lot of money, you can help a lot of people and have a lot of fun. Right? I was looking at my week. I'm like, oh, played golf on Saturday with my son at one of the nicest courses in the world in Newport Beach. Then I went to the Grammy Awards. Right? Then I filmed a TV show yesterday. Now I'm here for Aspire. Then I'll be at the Super Bowl. That shit doesn't happen unless you make money. And I'm going to raise a lot of money for charity and help a lot of people every single day doing this stuff. So it's super important. Great question. All right, next. Thank you. And what is, what's your name? Yep.
So I'm Heather, and I'm the founder of Publicity for Good.
Never heard of it.
I know. But I have a question I want to come up and ask you. But before that, I really want to give gratitude to David Williams. He has been doing private coaching with you for a while and blessed us with a free coaching spot with you. And because of that, like, I think in January we had 111 sales calls. We're scaling the business, and being able just to tap your brain and get coaching, like, there's so much value. And I feel like every time we have our calls with you, every other week, it's like we're at the spa. Like, there's such a sense of peace and certainty that come from just being in your community and coaching with you. So I'm just telling you that you're helping us.
Thank you.
And I hope it inspires everyone else too, because we're going big places, and it's because of you. And David, it's because of you and that you blessed us.
And I'll tell you what Sharon Lecter told me. It's actually because of you. You're doing the work. So I have tons of people that don't do the work. And you just do, you take the dummy tax that we paid and you make it better. And it's that simple. And you guys come prepared every time. And I just, that's why, you know, I'm blessed because I do have a big wait list of people that like to work with me. Group is for everyone, but to work one-on-one, that's why I guarantee it. I guarantee it both ways, because if someone's not doing the work and they do not like it and I don't get big fans from it, but I fire them and I just am very truthful, I can't help you. And then they get, oh, no, no. I'm like, no, I can't help you because you won't do the work. You won't help yourself. And you do guys do that. And you're killing it, by the way.
Can I ask you a question?
Yep.
All right, I'm going to come up with you. Can you record
us? Yeah. Well, Austin's like, I'm good at that.
All right. So it's Heather from Publicity for Good. I'm with David Meltzer. You had a huge announcement. You're now the chairman of the Napoleon Hill Institute. And you have a TV show that is on Shudder TV. And, of course, we all know the Jerry Maguire movie.
Yeah, that's the least impressive thing.
So my question is, why does PR matter? And how does it help you scale your business? So many people are fearful. They're like, what's the ROI of PR? Like, how have you seen the value of PR, and why does it matter?
PR is extremely important. We talked earlier about you can't sell a secret. Mm-hmm. And so the amplification that occurs through PR is exponential in its nature. So if, you know, Steve Clarkson was called the Dream Maker. He's a quarterback coach, a quarterback guru for Will Smith's kids, Snoop's kids, very wealthy David Sills, who went to Virginia. And he would charge $250,000 a year to coach a 14-year-old, a 12-year-old to be a quarterback. And the only reason he could do that is because we got him an article way back when, before social media, in the USA Today, saying that he is the dream maker. And then when Will Smith, and he got credibility, and an emotional connection. Remember, there's three things that will help: credibility, emotional connection, and your ability to quantify and articulate the quantification of value, which is giving people more of what they like and what they don't like. So he basically, in the article, as I coached him on the PR side, he said, look, how much does it cost to go to USC for 4 years? And I can guarantee you that if I coach your kid, he'll get a full scholarship to a school like USC, besides all the other benefits from being a quarterback at USC or Michigan or Ohio State or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he, in the article, talked about the quantitative value. Remember, value is only derived in two ways: giving people more of what they like, what they know, or what's working, or taking away what they don't like, what they don't know, or what's not working. And so when you can articulate that via PR, that you stimulate interest better, transition interest, and share a vision, and even can manage and develop a vision through PR. And so if you get an honest PR person who also is interested in helping people, then you get multiple places. Now with social media, it's amplified. So when you, I get news releases all the time about us and about what's going on, but it's not that that gets the most following, right? It's when it gets repost and people congratulate you and they're like, oh my God, GoFund yourself's amazing. Or they take a, you know, Dan Fleischman was with us yesterday, right? He did his little video. I think that thing got way more play than Yahoo Finance or CNBC or whatever else they have it. It's extremely important, but you have to have the right person.
Mm-hmm. But I also think too, lastly, like, does anyone else want to have a videographer like David Dream on the vision board? So to close the loop, why I love PR is all you need is your messy story, your hero's journey. So for anyone who's in a small market, producers want to feature local entrepreneurs. So much accessibility for all of us to go to our hometown on TV. And we always talk about production. You can get the raw clip and create all these reels from it. So
yeah, well, look, there's three things that you can get out of PR as well. So one is experiential. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of PR people miss the fact that there's an extremely valuable experience in PR as the person, mm-hmm. like going on a TV show, even the local radio station. And then two is business development, which should be obvious. Yeah. But the one that isn't as obvious to everybody else is post-production content. And I'll tell you one of my favorite stories about this is I dreamed of being in the American Airlines feature in the centerfold, right? They give the story about you. And so they called me and they're like, it was 2019. Hey, we're going to feature you in American Airways magazine. And I was like, oh my God. And you get 2 months. So there's six editions that go out in the airplane. And so they're like, which ones do you want? I'm like, what's the choices? And they listed, well, December, January's, you know, the most popular because the most people fly in December and January. I'm like, done. I'm doing December and January. So lucky me, made the decision in 2019. It was going to come out December 2020 and January 2020. I'm not even sure they put the magazines out. And so I was trying to figure, I got a whole big box of American Airways magazine with my picture and my whole big messy story.
Yeah.
And so what did I do? I went on the video and Instagram Live interviews and I had the magazine with me and I made fun of myself. I said, you know, I talk about ego and my favorite quote is you're either humble or you're about to be. And here I go again. Yeah. My ego, like I thought everybody in the world was going to see me in the centerfold and want to do business with Dave Meltzer. I was going to be super famous and nobody's there. And I held the article up on the camera. And now millions of people got to see that I was in the center of that magazine because of post-production content.
Yeah.
And the truth is, the only people that really would see that in there or know who you are, your family, so the people who already love you or hate you are like, dude, I saw you in the magazine. You're amazing. But my mom already thought I was amazing.
Yeah. Powerful. Well, thank you. Thank you for coaching us.
Keep up the good. You're amazing. Thank you. Free commercials, too. That's awesome. Could have sold it better myself, Dave. All right, who's next? It's free. Come on. Oh, thank you. Good to see you. What's your name?
My name is Jeremy Dover. What do you do as a financial coach when you see yourself stuck? And I think the question, I was coming in and you were answering a question. and you were saying that you mean to nothing, $250. It's like that question was my question, but because I was coming in and you were giving that answer. So when you find yourself stuck, what do you think?
When you find yourself stuck, especially financially, understand what being stuck is. Just think about the science of being stuck. If I was sitting at home, high on my mom's couch, maybe sick and broke, and my mom locked all the doors in the living room so I couldn't get out, would I feel stuck? No, because I'm sitting at home, high on my mom's couch, broke and sick, and not trying to leave or get better. And so, when we recognize that only people that are pursuing their potential feel stuck. Only people that are pursuing their potential get stuck. And the fastest way to get unstuck is find someone that's gotten unstuck in the subject matter, topic, or expertise that you want to get unstuck at, or the industry, career, or job that you're in and you feel stuck at. Because they've already figured out, if I already knew the directions, I could get you unstuck. And so we're all trying to figure out how to get unstuck because we're trying to pursue our potential. Pursuit of the potential is what creates enjoyment, right? I always say the secret to life and what gives us the secrets to life, the cheat codes to make life easy and to identify the diseasy is to enjoy what people don't like or don't love or you don't like or don't love. Those people that can enjoy being stuck of what you don't like or what love or other people don't like or love, and they do it consistently every day, persistently without quitting, in the pursuit of their own potential, what they want. Not what other people want, not what's missing and not what you don't have, but what you want, life will tell you all its secrets. It gives you the cheat codes and life becomes easy. And I think one of the things that has helped me make all the money when I was young and make it back again is for whatever reason, I looked at, maybe it was because I wanted to be an athlete and I sucked and my delta was so high and I still wasn't that good, but I just enjoyed it. Like I enjoyed what other people don't like or love, and I could do it every day in enjoyment. And so when you're stuck, number one, congratulate yourself that you haven't quit. Why? Because mistakes will never stop you from getting where you want to be or better. Lack of commitment will every time. So remind yourself, I'm committed. Because I know I'm stuck. I'm not sitting on this couch. I'm trying to go through the doors, the window, the vent. I'm trying to figure this out. But I also know the fastest way to get out of here is find someone that knows how to get out of here. And I'm going to double down on that piece of advice. Most people, and I'm going to talk about it tonight at dinner, most people have no problem giving. They either have a problem recognizing what they're given, definitely have a problem receiving what they're given, and the biggest problem most people have, which is why I have people knock on doors, is most people don't have faith. And look, I don't care if you're religious, spiritual, theoretical, or philosophical, because I didn't have faith. But I didn't. But I tell you, I'm one of the most faithful people in the world because I am not afraid of asking. I'm not, because I know in my heart there's more than enough of everything for everyone. My biggest honor at the Super Bowl this year, I've won all types of funky awards in sports, especially in humanitarian awards, is that they're naming a sandwich in New Orleans. The more than enough, I'm creating my own category. I call it the no po' boy. It's a more than enough sandwich. Because that's where I live my life. I literally, every time I think about not asking, I remind myself that I have faith. And for me, it's God. You call it what you want. But I have faith in God that has more than enough of everything for everyone. He protects me, promotes me, loves and perfects me. I'm just too stupid to understand it. So the outcomes today that look like punishment, things that you, there's no evidence that I'm going to get to where I think I'm going to get to, or even worse, the evidence is contrary to where I think I'm going to be or better, and I have faith, I'm going to ask for more. I'm on my way. I'm like you. I'm stuck. I lost everything. I'm stuck. But I didn't think to myself, oh, this is it. For minutes and moments, I did. And actually, back then, it was more than minutes and moments. I felt very punished. But the minute I got out of punishment and got into promotion, protection, perfection, I got unstuck really quick. And I went for it. I asked. I went for the people that had a better relationship with money than I did. And I asked them, hey, can you help me? Or do you know anyone that can help me? Right, the two questions I always love to ask people, would it help you if, or do you know anyone that could help me? Would it help you if that was in your rhetoric every single day? I promise you, exponentially, you'll get so far. That's why I'm building this neighborhood of this frequency of people. Because we're going to help each other. We know people that are going to help each other. That's the fastest way to get to where you want to be or better. Yeah.